Welcome to this segment of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now we're going to talk about the Kim Davis story, but specifically we're going to focus on the law. We're going to talk with a respected Christian constitutional attorney, John Eidsmo, who's written many great books, including Christianity and the Constitution, and he works for the Foundation for Moral Law. Am I saying that right, John?
That is all correct. My title here is actually Senior Counsel and Resident Scholar.
Super.
And I'm turning 70 next month, but I wouldn't retire even if I could afford to.
Okay, good. And I hope you won't, as the Lord leads. All right, so Kim Davis went to jail because she felt that her rights, her constitutional, really her conscience couldn't be violated by her going ahead and giving same-sex wedding licenses. Now, my question is, what is the law? A lot of people are saying, hey, the Supreme Court has ruled. That's the law. Live with it.
Well, I'd have to disagree. What the law actually is, first of all, is the higher law of God. And our founders understood that clearly. Our Declaration of Independence says we're entitled to our independence by the laws of nature and of nature's God. And they were avid readers of Sir William Blackstone, for example, who said that any human law that is contrary to the higher law of God as revealed in Scripture or in nature is no law at all and invalid. Now, I would have to insist this, that Kim Davis did not violate a law. She refused to follow a Supreme Court decision. Now, the law of Kentucky required her to refrain from issuing same-sex marriage licenses. That was a law that the people of Kentucky had put into effect. What she did was refuse to follow a Supreme Court ruling that that was invalid. Now, I would say that if there was ever a law, or rather ever a Supreme Court decision in the history of this country that deserves to be disregarded, it is this latest same-sex marriage decision, Obergefell versus Hodges. First of all, it is arrived at by an illegitimate means. It's a 5-4 decision with two of those who voted with the majority should have recused themselves and had no business voting because they themselves had performed same-sex marriage. And I'll just tell you, Jerry, that I've been a lawyer 45 years, and in all my time in law, I have never seen a case where the obligation to recuse was as obvious as it is here.
Yeah.
Secondly, it is a decision that has no basis whatsoever in the Constitution.
Right.
Chief Justice Roberts said that very clearly in his dissenting opinion. In that opinion, he just says, let's not deceive ourselves. This has nothing to do with the Constitution. It is simply five unelected lawyers who have decided to impose their subjective will as to what they think the Constitution ought to say on the American people.
So it's really the rule of law versus the rule of lawyers. I think that, by the way, one of the other justices disagreeing with this opinion came up with that. I believe that was Scalia.
Scalia said some very similar things. In fact, Scalia went even a step further when he quoted what Justice Kennedy had said in the majority opinion, saying that the framers of the 14th Amendment knew that they couldn't define its outer boundaries, and so they decided to leave that to future generations. And then he says, now when Kennedy says future generations, what he really means is us, not the generation, but the nine unelected lawyers who serve in this court. And he went on to say, we are not representatives of the nation as a whole. In fact, we're not even representatives of the legal profession as a whole. He said, every one of us nine Supreme Court justices is a graduate of either Harvard or Yale. That's a rather narrow cross-section of the community as a whole. He went on to say, most of us from the Eastern Seaboard, some from the West Coast. There is not one Midwesterner. There is not one Southerner. There is not one Westerner, unless you count the West Coast. And so it's just a very narrow group of lawyers who make up this court. He went on to say there is not a single evangelical Christian on this court, even though they make up a substantial portion of our population. So why should this highly unrepresentative body of unelected lawyers be entitled to dictate social policy for the nation when the policy they are dictating has no foundation whatsoever in the Constitution?
But it does seem one could be unsettled if one thought in terms of, well, the even though the Supreme Court has ruled on something, that doesn't necessarily make it the law. I mean, in other words, could we be leading down the path of anarchy if we don't accept Supreme Court decisions?
That is a danger, I will admit. But I think if we go the other direction, we're moving toward tyranny. And I think we need to draw a balance in between. And, you know, we talk about civil disobedience, and that being the individual who decides based upon either a personal conscience or religious conviction, what he believes to be the will of God, that he cannot follow this law. That's what we talk about when we're dealing with private individuals. When we're dealing with a public official, we're talking about interposition, or some call it the doctrine of the lesser magistrates. And this doctrine simply says that it is the duty of lesser magistrates, such as state Supreme Court justices or probate judges, or in the case of Kentucky, county clerks, it is their duty to the people they represent, the people who elected them, to interpose, that is, stand between those people and the higher magistrates, that is, the Supreme Court, that has begun to act in a dictatorial and tyrannical manner. And in fact, I would go a step further in this. I would say that when a higher magistrate acts in such a dictatorial or tyrannical manner, he is in disobedience to God. And if a lesser magistrate just says, well, I have to follow, I have to do what the law says, the lesser magistrate then is complicit in the higher magistrate's disobedience.
Mm.
And, well, we tie this in with the situation here in Alabama with Chief Justice Moore, first with the Ten Commandments issue back in the early 2000s, and now with the same-sex marriage issue. And I'll just mention there that keep your eyes on the Alabama Supreme Court. They are going to be issuing a ruling sometime. I have no idea when it'll come, but as to whether or not the Obergefell decision will be applied or will be nullified as far as the state of Alabama. But many were saying that Chief Justice Moore should resign his position rather than to simply act in defiance of a federal court. I would say that if he were to resign his position, he would betray the people who elected him.
Yeah.
They elected him to establish the moral foundation of law. To resign is to betray the trust they placed in him, and I'd say the same in regard to Kim Davis.
By the way, in reference to some people saying that Judge Moore, Chief Justice Moore, should resign, is that going back to the 2003, or are you talking about post-2012 when he was reelected to Chief Justice?
Well, in both cases, there were many in 2003 who were saying he should resign, and there was a leading Southern Baptist official who I think really just didn't, well, I think he didn't quite understand the situation. He also said that he was quoted out of context, but he said that Chief Justice Moore should resign. Wow. I was asked about this at a conference, and my answer was, well, yes, I agree, he should resign. But then I also think that the members of the Continental Congress should have resigned rather than sign the Declaration of Independence. They should have just said, King George, we can't go along with this, we resign.
Yeah.
No, they had a duty to stand up for the people who elected them. And that was true of Chief Justice Moore in 2003 with the Ten Commandments. It's true in 2015 as well. Now, your listeners may not be aware of all that's happened here in Alabama, but in Alabama in 2006, the voters adopted the Sanctity of Marriage Amendment by 81% of the vote.
Wow.
And this amendment, which prohibited same-sex marriage, was struck down by a federal judge in the Southern District of Alabama in January of this year.
2015.
Just one single federal judge.
Okay.
And the Alabama Supreme Court, on a petition by the Alabama Policy Council, a group called LCAP, and several of the probate judges who were affected by this, filed a motion with the Alabama Supreme Court asking the court to rule on whether or not they were required to follow the Alabama Constitution or whether they're required to follow this order of the federal judge. The Alabama Supreme Court ruled that they were required to follow the Alabama Constitution, that decisions of federal courts, lower federal courts, are not binding on state courts, and citing numerous Supreme Court precedents saying exactly that. Johnson versus Williams, for example, as recent as 2013. And anyway, that was before the Supreme Court issued its decision. Now that they have issued their decision, several of those probate judges have now filed a subsequent motion asking the Alabama Supreme Court to keep that order in effect. And that's what we're waiting for a decision on. Now, if the Alabama Supreme Court were to decide to do that, there would be a constitutional crisis. Where to go from there, I don't know, but this could completely rewrite the whole nature of federal-state relations, especially in regard to the judiciary.
Yeah. Well, you're a founder, I mean, a scholar on the Founding Fathers, and I tried to be too, but there's just no question at all that the Founders never intended for the Supreme Court or any small group, an oligarchy really, to take over the country and to dictate the way it should be. The Constitution enables we the people, but Jefferson even pointed out way back when, you know, that the Constitution is a thing of wax in the hands of some of these judges, and he was disapproving of that idea. And so we have a problem of judicial activism, and have had
very
that
true.
For the last
and
few years.
Jefferson was a very strong critic of that, but possibly his leading opponent, Alexander Hamilton, who would probably be more likely to favor judicial power than Jefferson. But Alexander Hamilton himself, in the Federalist Papers, calls the court the least dangerous branch of government.
Yep, number 81.
He says that the Congress exercises will, they determine policy, the executive exercises force, they carry out the will, but the judiciary only exercises judgment. And I think Hamilton would be as shocked as Jefferson or anybody else to come back today and to see just how the court feels free to manipulate the terms of the Constitution itself to mean whatever they want them to mean.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to use an example, if you don't mind, from Abraham Lincoln. When Lincoln was once asked, he was in a discussion, and he just asked a question, how many legs does a dog have? And, four. And so he said, well, suppose we call the tail a leg, then how many? Well, five. Lincoln said, no, he still has four. Just calling a tail a leg doesn't make it a leg.
Yeah.
And just calling a same-sex relationship marriage doesn't make it marriage any more than calling a corn stalk a tree makes a cornfield a forest.
Wow.
Point of the matter is, words have fixed meanings. And once the courts start taking the position that they can redefine words to mean whatever they want them to mean, they are claiming virtually absolute power.
Wow. Okay, what would you say to those Christians who would say, shame on you, Kim Davis, Romans 13 demands that we obey the government, come what may, whether we agree or disagree?
First of all, Romans 13 says that we are to obey the civil authorities, but it says that we do so because they are rewarders of that which is good, and they are a terror to evil works.
Mm.
That implies there's a higher moral standard of right and wrong that government has to be subject to. Now, what happens then when government rewards evil and punishes good? Well, Paul does not address that question right there, but James and the other disciples address that in Acts 5:29 when they say, we must obey God rather than man. Likewise, the Hebrew midwives, when they are commanded to slay the male Hebrew children, and we read in Exodus 1 that they feared God and therefore did not do as the Pharaoh commanded them, and that God blessed them for their disobedience. We can look to Daniel, we can look to Esther, we can look to many such examples. Point of the matter is, yes, we have a duty to obey government, but that clearly is not intended to be an absolute. Paul himself, the author of that passage, is in jail many times and ultimately is executed for his faith.
All right, what is the website of your organization?
This is the Foundation for Moral Law, And
.org.
You probably know that if you see the ACLU in a case, we'll probably be on the other side. But anyway, our website is morallaw2ls.org.
Morallaw.org. John Eidsmo, constitutional attorney. Thank you so much for being with us. God bless you.
And thank you, Jerry. I sure appreciate all you're doing with Truth That Transforms.
God bless. Bye-bye.